All right. Good evening, everyone. And thank you for spending this Tuesday evening with me once again, Tuesday Night Torah, the last Tuesday of 2020. And any day in 2020 couldn't come last soon enough. So we're going to ring out the end of this year, ring in the new year with some Torah. To warm us up. Okay. Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. So Yaakov lived in Egypt. Shvas Reishana, 17 years. Vayechi Yimei Yaakov Shnei Chayav Sheva Shanim Barbaim U'me'at Shana. So Jacob lived 17 years in the land of Egypt, so that the span of his life came to 147 years. Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Amut. And Israel's days, right, meaning Yaakov, his days became near to die, so he calls for his son Yosef. And do a kindness and a truth for me. Al na tikbereini b'mitzrayim. Do not bury me in Egypt. So, by the way, this is where, just parenthetically, this is where we learn about the concept of chesed shel emet, of a kindness of truth. Chesed shel emet being the kind of kindness that we do for someone that we can't be paid back for, right? It's something that, you know, that we do, and there's no chance for any sort of compensation by way of a smile, of a thank you, right? So that's chesed shel emes that we do, especially when it comes to someone who passes away. And that's obviously what Yaakov is asking for, because he doesn't want to be buried in Egypt. He wants to be able to be buried in his ancestral burial place, in Marad HaMachpelah. And we're going to look at the first pasuk though. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim. So Yaakov lives in Egypt. So it's a little bit odd, you know, what this means. Why does it tell us that he lived there also for 17 years? Why does it tell us his age? Like, we knew how old he was. You'll see soon. We knew how old he was in last week's parsha when he meets up. It's almost like, by the way, just to bring you back up to speed. So what does this mean? Vayechi Yaakov, right? He lived there. And by the way, we know this is the parsha of his death. Notice you have, the parsha of death, of the death of Yaakov called Vayechi. The parsha of the death of Sarah called Chaye Sarah, right? There's clearly a theme that's supposed to be there. But why is it important to us that he lived in Egypt for these 17 years? So says the Kli Yakar, Lama Parsha Zus Stuma. So the Kli Yakar points out the fact, something that our rabbis bring up, that if you look in the Torah and you see Parshas Vayechi, you'll see it's Stuma in the sense that there's no break between the end of one parasha and the beginning of the next one. It almost literally flows right into the other. And that's something that's very odd, right? We don't have that. Usually when there's another parasha, there's going to be a break. Either a break, it'll be the next line, or at least there'll be something, right? It'll be, it'll end here and then there'll be some space. This actually flows right into the next one, right? So just as Parshas Vayigash ends, Vayechi begins right away in the Torah, in the way that the Torah is written. So why is it stuma? It's closed. Ela ptucha being open, being like that there's a little space in between the end of one and the beginning of the other. Ela kivan sheniftar Yaakov hitchil hashibutz. He quotes three midrashim. And he says, one midrash is that because it shows us that since the moment that Yaakov died, the slavery began. Now, it's funny because we know that it didn't necessarily begin when Yaakov died. So we'll have to understand that. Davar acher, shebikesh legalos haketz v'nistam imenu. Another idea is that Yaakov sought to give out the secret to the end of days. Right. If anyone was listening to the Mashiach Musings piece that I was doing a weekly basis on Wednesdays, so you know that like we're not necessarily supposed to be looking to be ligaloted haketz. We're not supposed to be looking to reveal like when, you know, Mashiach's going to come. It just sort of, you know, we have to live our lives. It can't be an ikar in terms of what our Judaism is all about. So he wanted to tell everyone, okay, guys, this is when it's going to be over. But it was closed off from him. It was sealed, right? So that's the idea of the stuma, right? Oh, it's closed because this idea, this wisdom was closed off for him, where he knew and then he lost the prophecy. Davar acher, third idea, shenistemu mimenu kol tzara shebaolam, that all of the pain and travail in the world was closed off from him, meaning like good things, right? Nistemu mimenu kol tzara shebaolam. So again, three ideas brought down by the Medrash. One, that literally right as he died, the shibud, the subjugation begins. Two, that he wanted to reveal when the shibud would end, when the redemption would come, and Hashem took away that ability, nistam, right? He closed him off from it. Three, that he was closed off from all of the tsaros, all of the troubles in the world. Okay, that's a little bit of a weird one. So kachi nuscha hanuscha bevreishis rabba says this is the idea. These are the ideas that are brought down in the Medrash. Kefir anira she'ein smach min amikra l'chol adrashos elu. So the Kli Yakar says, as only he can say, where'd they get this from? There's no allusion. There's no scriptural, hint to any of these drushos, to any of these concepts. Like what? The kulam kemit nabiim. He says it's as if they're all prophesying, right? They're all like, oh, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Like they have no idea. It seems very, in our modern day terms, we would say it seems very random. Where'd they get this from? What's this talking about? Vashenira libazeh shlefishematzinu kan stima shelo kederach parshiot hastumot. He says, as I alluded to earlier, he says, the reality here is that the stima, the closed nature of this parsha is so different than any other, even where there are certain parshiot stumot that don't have much of a break. There's always some sort of break, something. But here there's nothing. One flows right into the other. The kan ein revach klal. There is no space at all between Vayigash and Vayichi. Vaday shekavanas Ezra hasofer. It's clear that the kavana, I would think for sure that the intention of Ezra hasofer, Ezra the scribe who set up, who gathered, right, the parsha, who canonized, right, Tanakh, and set things up as to how the Torah should be written. Very interesting just to note that, right, the Torahs are written in the same way that they've been for thousands of years, like mamish, which is really amazing, as we know, right? If one thing is wrong in the Torah, the entire Torah is invalidated, right? So it's actually stayed. And there's been research and experiments done on different Torahs, from different eras, going back like 1500 years. And they found really rarely, barely any differences, maybe like in, above here or above now, it's the same word, but with above or without above. They didn't, it's all been for the most part, the same, right? As it was back then. So what was Ezra trying to convey? Lasmich pasuk vayichi, lepasuk shelafanav, vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen, by Achzuba, etc. I'll just show you what I'm talking about. Just to look in a tikkun. I have my tikkun handy. I started teaching Jacob Morgenstern for his bar mitzvah. If anyone wants to feel old, you could join me. And here, I'll show you. So the difference, the break between Vayigash and Vayichi is, let's see, Yosef, here, see, it's so hard to find because Vayechi starts literally in the middle Where is it? Mani Bivoi, Vemer Eli, Glamer Yaakov, Ayagid.
Oh, here. Vayachin.
Right, it's right there. It says by a fiat, but there's literally no break, right? And I'll show you what I mean by a break. A break is like here, right? There you see a break,
right? Or here, let's see the separation between miketz and vayigash, right? What a regular parsha should look like. Here, here's a break
between miketz.
That's the issue here. So one flows right into the other, and says the Kli Yakar, I think that Ezra HaSofer wanted that to happen specifically to show you that there's a connection between the very last pasuk in Vayigash and this first pasuk in Vayechi. So what does it say? Vayeshev Yisrael Beretz Goshen. Yaakov lived in Goshen. And the Jewish people, by Achzuba, and they took to the land, right? They were enjoying themselves. By Yifru, by Yirbu Meod, by Yechi Yaakov, and they multiplied. Everything was wonderful. End of Vayigash, boom, by Yechi Yaakov, Yaakov lived. What's going on? Ki ilu haya hakol pasuk echad, as if it's even one pasuk. Al kein nechlegu gimel lishonos elu b'mashmo dorshin. Therefore, these three midrashim came and gave these three different ideas. Lelashon harishon doresh shekivan sheniftar Yaakov hitchil hashibud. Right, remember the first drasha was that right when the reason why it's stuma, the reason why it's closed is because right when Yaakov died, that's when the shibud began. Hold on, Fred Danzig. Just we did not decide where one parsha ended and the next began. We got five books. Very creative. Okay, good point. Right, he wanted to say that it was really the non-Jewish world that did that. It wasn't us. So anyone could correct me if I'm wrong. But when it came to the parshiot themselves, the parshiot we divided. Right, that was a Jewish thing. It's the prakim, the chapters. Those were decided. That's like, you know, King James Bible stuff. So it's as the chapters, as we know them, those were decided by the non-Jewish world, whoever was, you know, was looking at that. But actually it's our Masorah, as far as the partial, the break between one or the other. Were sentences divided? Again, you won't see a division in sentences, Jeffrey asked, but they were divided. There's a klal, a principle brought down in the Gemara called pasuk shelo pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu anan lo paskinan. Any pasuk that Moshe himself didn't make the break for, we don't do. We don't make our own breaks for psukim. Meaning Moshe again. Moshe set that. Those were, or at least, that's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Those go all the way back. It's the chapters that we, as we call them in terms of prakim or chapters, those go to date more to like these, you know, annotators, non-Jewish annotators. We did pasuk, we did what's called a parsha, or a sedra, that came from our Masorah. They didn't create that, for us. Even though you don't see a break exists. And that's why, by the way, if you ever notice when someone's laning, right? So like, cause I'm teaching laning to Jacob and whatever, we're breaking our teeth over it right now. He's just started. And, you know, you could let, if you miss a trup, if you get a, you know, if you do, you know, I don't know, if you say Vayechi versus Vayechi, like, okay, you could let it go. Whatever it is, what it is. You know. But if you don't end the pasuk correctly, right? Ending a pasuk is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Be'eretz Mitzrayim. And you say, Be'eretz Mitzrayim. That's actually something you're really supposed to correct. Because what you're doing is you're making a break, or you're not making a break that's supposed to be made. And again, that's based on our own Masorah. Okay, Vaita. Anyways, Kilulashon Rishon. Hador Shekiv Yaakov Hitchil Hashibud Yakishor Shnei Psukim Elu Al Zeha Ofen. Ki mitchila amar vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen. Hora b'lashon yeshiva. Shailahem yeshiva shel shavu menucha. So it says they lived there, and they settled there, and it was very nice. It was tranquil, it was peaceful. A golden age of the Jewish people in Egypt. Vayachsu. And they were enjoying it, and they were taking to the land, right? It was, oh, we could live here. This is nice. And they were fruitful. They were multiplying. All of this took place while Yaakov was alive. Because it was in Yaakov's lifetime that they merited to be able to live the way that they did. So now you can understand what the Medrash was saying. Where the Medrash was saying, oh yeah, the end of Vayigash says that they had this wonderful life in Eretz Goshen. Why? Because Vayichi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim. Because as long as Yaakov was alive, things were very good. Things were very nice. They didn't mess with them. The old, the patriarch Jacob, you know, was, you know, his Zechus was looking out for them. The people, Paro didn't want to mess. He was, right, we know, right, Yaakov brought bracha to the Nile. They say the Nile, you know, was very fertile. It used to rise, you know, anywhere Paro walked when Yaakov was alive because of a bracha that he made. So, you know, good things are going on because Yaakov's there. Once Yaakov dies out, that generation, we know that's when things began to go south. Same thing, by the way, at the end of Parsha Vayechi, it says, Vayama Yosef b'chol hador hahu. And Joseph and that whole generation died. And that was when all of a sudden the Egyptians, you know, Paro and the Egyptians are looking. And as often happens, right, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Who are these people? Why are these interlopers here? What's going on, right? This immigrant, you know, popular, we don't want them. We don't want them, right? Because they are the people that knew them from before. You know, it's a new leadership and the old leadership died. Okay. Right? So basically all of the things that happened to the Jewish people during Yaakov's lifetime in Egypt, they all got turned on their head, right? Vayeshvu, no, there was no more peace and tranquility. They were being enslaved. It was terrible. Right? Oh, they had a foothold on the land? No, it was the opposite. The people had the land had a foothold on them. They became chattel. They became slaves. And, oh, they were having children? No, what happened? Right? They started throwing their children into the Nile. But it's a, you know, it's kind of that classic story, the classic narrative of the Jew in exile. Right? Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. You know, the government, you know, the people, everything's, and then all of a sudden, it starts going downhill. You know, halavai, we should be able to protect ourselves here. Obviously, we definitely talked a lot about anti-Semitism, and it's there. There's no question, right? To imagine that in Europe right now, what's going on, right? In living memory of the Holocaust, to imagine that anti-Semitism is just so rampant throughout Europe, it's insane. It's insane, and to imagine that it's here. Is insane. But kacha, you know, we always have to be on guard for that kind of concept. And, you know, we have to look to our leaders, to our leadership, you know, hopefully to inspire us and keep us in a space having the right perspective.
You
could also say that maybe what happened was there was like a, you know, one was causative to the other, that the slavery happened specifically after he died because Hashem decided, you know, like, you know what, I don't want to enslave them, you know, during Yaakov's lifetime. So again, there's that connection. There's the connection between Yaakov's lifetime and then the slavery beginning. And that's the idea of the, you know, being closed, in the partial being closed, being connected to one another, so that, you know, when Yaakov dies, that's when the slavery begins. And obviously that's the beginning of Sefer Shmos, right? The beginning of Sefer Shmos, by definition, is the book of exile. It starts with exile, at least. Okay. Okay. Ulalashon shlishi. Hadoresh. Lefisha nistimu. So remember, the third drasha was, and we'll get to the other one. The third drasha was that all of the tsaros in the world, all of the troubles in the world, were closed off from him. That's a weird one. Yomar akasuv, afal pi shaya kol yama bitzara vigerus. Even though, what it's saying is that even though all of Yaakov's life, it was one trial and one travail and one challenge to another, right? You know, we know the kind of life he lived, very difficult. As he said to Paro, when Paro asked, man, you look really old in last week's parsha. Paro looks at him like, man, you look, you're ragged, you're wrinkled. I mean, you look so old. What happened? Well, because he had a really difficult life. Mikomakom, legodel hashalva, shahaya lo toch yadzayin shanim, shara yeshivas bana bishalom. Really beautiful idea. He went through so much garbage in his life, so much difficulty, and it really wore him down. But then when he gets to Egypt, and he's able to bask in seeing his family and seeing his children, and look at how they're living tranquilly and beautifully and wonderfully. And he has his grandchildren, you know, hanging out with him. And it's like the biggest bracha in the world. He forgot all of the pain, all of the travail, all of the sorrow. This is the classic, the quintessential, you know, Holocaust survivor grandparent who made it. Like, I remember when I think about my grandparents, like my grandfather, and Chani, you remember my grandfather. He looked so old. He did. He died. He was 76 when he died. He looked like he was 95. You see pictures of him when he's 60, when he's 50. He looked so old. Why? Because he was in Auschwitz for like 3.5 years. Auschwitz and Buchenwald, the back of, I mean, the life expectancy. We know the average life expectancy in Auschwitz, if you weren't put to death right away, was 6 to 9 months. So why did Simon Laufer, Zichron Lebrach, look so old? because of what he went through. And yet, when you see him, you see pictures of him, he's beaming at a kid's bar mitzvah, at a kid's wedding. Unbelievable. You see a smile ear to ear. Why? Because it's as if, right? There's, in some magical, divine way, you could go ahead and conquer all of these and overcome all of these challenges, and then to be able to be zochet to experience, you know, life and vibrancy and the continuation and new generations, it's amazing. Okay, but can I, just to push back on that, is it, Alan, is it bitterness that returns, or is it a sense of realism, or perhaps a sense of just, you know, of like reverting to old ways? You think it's bitterness? Okay. All right. Touche. All right. Continue. Very good. Thank you. So Mikol Makom, Lego de la Shalva Yashad. Fine. So he gets this. Fine. Lekach Nemar Vayihi Yeme Yaakov Shnei Chayav Kuf Mem Zayin Shana Ki Osan Kuf Lamed Shanim Lo Ayu Nechshavim Michlal Yeme Chayav Lego del Tsarosa. So he says the reason why it says that Yaakov lived 147 years, but here he lived 17 years, is basically to say, knock out the original 130. La yu nechshav michlal yemei chayev legol de tzarasav. They were so difficult. They were so horrific. Knock them out. Ve'achshav lemafreya nechshavu kulam shnei chayev. And in that way, it sort of it elevated it. What's the word? Not validated. It redeemed all of the earlier years of his life. So Vayechi Yaakov, Yaakov lived 17 years in Egypt, and that 17 years had him took the whole 147, the other 130 plus 17, and redeemed, you know, how his life had lived, how he had lived his life before that. V'zelefi shenistimu mimenu kol atzaro she'avru u'ki'ilu hayachai chayim ne'imim v'arevim v'chol shnosav. Because it's as if all of those tsaros that happened to him were closed up, right? They were locked away somewhere, right? Put away somewhere deep in his subconscious, and he was able to just enjoy life and enjoy the life that that he was blessed to have or to experience at this point. Sharei be'emes Yosef hayachai. Therefore, Vayechi Yaakov is connected to the pasuk earlier, the preceding pasuk, right? Remember, we don't have a break. Right? Because, like, oh, the kids are there. You could just imagine, oh, you see the kids, and they're having children, and they're playing on the playground, and they're on the swings, and there you are. And it redeemed, you know, everything else. Mashehishmi Rashi, Lashon Zelefi Shanirilo, Shahainu Hacha Lashon Rishon. If you think about it, he says this, I think this one makes sense. Okay, so we have the first pshat, which we talked about, which was that the slavery began after Yaakov died. The third pshat of the all of these tsaros, right, all of his trials, his travails, you know, were went away. They were redeemed by these 17 golden years that he had in Egypt. Ve'ulam ha'lashon ha'sheni d'hadoresh. So what about the second lashon? Shebikesh legalos ha'keitz v'nistalcha mimenu hashchina. That he was trying to reveal when the redemption would come, and Hashem took away the divine presence. L'fi shebala tarei. So what does it have to do with this, you know, continuation of psukim? Why are you telling us this 17 years? So he wants to say that the 147 really is about redeeming the other 130. Why say 17 here? Did we not know that he's in Egypt for 17 years? Because when he went to Paro in Parsha Vayigash, he said, how old are you? He said, I'm 130. So now that we see he's 147, hello, it's basic arithmetic. We should know that he's 17 years old. Why are you telling me 17 years? The Ode, Lama lo hizkir lashon zeh b'Avraham v'Yitzchak, oimo? Why doesn't it say this kind of thing with Avraham and Yitzchak? Oh, and by the way, he lived another blah, blah, blah years, and then this is how old he was. Elavadai shabala horos. Sheparsha, shepirsha, Hashchina mimenu. It's to show us that the Shechina departed from him. What happened? So this is really an interesting one. And this actually, this might flow well for you, Alan. You might like this shot best. So he says that when Yaakov finds out that Yosef is still alive, so there's the beautiful story of his granddaughter Serach, the daughter of Asher. She plays on a harp and she sings, Yosef's alive. He's a king in Egypt and so on. And it says, Batechi Ruach Yaakov, that Yaakov's spirit was revived. Shepi Rusho, what does it mean? His spirit was revived. Like he's back, right? Yaakov was like gone for 22 years. He's despondent. He's gone. And now he's back. His ruach is back. Sheperusha shesharsa alav shechina. You become a ruach Yaakov. So ruach is like ruach hakodesh. The divine presence was back with Yaakov, that which shows you that for all of those years, the 22 years, he was, you know, he's depressed, he was forlorn, he was in mourning, he didn't have the Shekhinah was missing from his life, right? He was not a happy person, and he couldn't have the Shekhinah with him in that way. So I might have thought, oh, that meant that the Shekhinah, now he has the Ruach HaKodesh back with him for the rest of his life. Kamash Malan, comes the pasuk to tell me, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. Pardon the Lugmar language here. This is the way he's talking, right? I would think, I might have thought, given a thumb. I might have thought to say that it's now with him for the rest of his life, the Shekhinah. But no, comes the pasuk coming, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. That Yaakov lived in Egypt. Ki bevol Mitzrayim chai Yaakov. When Yaakov got there, he might have lived in Egypt physically, avalo ruach Yaakov, but not his spirit. Shenistalka mimenu hashchina miyad. The Shekhinah left him. The Shekhinah departed from him. The divine presence left him at that moment when he came to Egypt. Lefisha amar amusa hapam, because he said acharei ro'otiyat panecha. He gets to Yosef, right, and they have this embrace, and he says, oh my. I could die now, he says, right? It's like the famous, I like pointing it out. Some of you might recall, right? In 1994, when the Rangers finally won a Stanley Cup after, since 1940, right? 54 years. There's a famous picture of the guy who has a plaque and he says, I can die now, right? It's exactly what Yaakov said. Amusa Pam, finally I see Yosef. That's all I need. I'm good. I can die now, he says. And yet, according to the Kli Yakar, right at that point, at that moment, that could have been. That was like sort of his, not a death wish, but he was saying, hey, I could die right now. And that would have been the moment, the point where he's going to reveal, you know, all of these hidden secrets. So God said, you know what? I got to take it away. Divine presence leaves now. You're good. You're good. You're in the leg. You're in the arms of your son, your beloved son. You're here. We don't understand why the Shekhinah left. Alkein ba parsha zu stuma. Therefore, the parsha comes as a closed parsha. L'samcha l'pasuk v'yeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen, to connect it to living in Goshen. L'fi she'meh hayadua. We know that there would be terrible repercussions, a terrible damage by knowing when the Mashiach is going to come, when the redemption will come. Because if you know when the redemption is going to come, when the Messiah is going to come, well, then why would I daven for it? Why would I hope for it? I would just, all right, it's not going to come. I'll pass it to the next generation. Maybe they'll get it. Maybe they'll get it. Jews live with hope. We live with a sense that Yeshua Hashem keherifayim, that the salvation of God can come in the blink of an eye. And I think on a deeper level, what the Kli Yakar is saying is that for Yaakov at this moment in his life, it happened. He got it. Yeshua Hashem. He got the salvation. It came in a blink of an eye. What? He's a prince in Egypt. He's ruling the Egypt. What? There's a famine right? Well, he's going to come save us. You know what, Yaakov? You got it. You learned the lesson. Genig. Enough for you. Okay? Let other people get it, but you can't give it away. If you give away the ending, you spoil the whole experience, the whole project. And that can't happen. And I think it's a very good question. So that's what I was going to close with, which is I think that that's what's happening. what the rabbis are doing, and you know, and Ezra HaSofer in creating the parsha in such a peculiar way that it flows right into the other, is basically saying, this is what happens in Galus. When we get into Galus, and Vayeach Zuba, when we allow this lifestyle and that land and the culture to just take hold of us, and we're comfortable and we enjoy it, it's never good. It brings subjugation. You might think all of your tsaras, you know, went away, but guess what? Did they really go away? Did they really not make up the bulk of who and what Yaakov Avinu was and is? Of course they did. But you know what? When you go and you're experiencing this, you know, you're living in the golden of Medina, so to speak, which is Egypt, all of a sudden it's like, all right, great. You know, it was never, it's not true. And we know that. We know that it's not true. We know that you can't just bottle it in, right? We know stories of survivors. And I'm speaking because we need to keep talking about survivors. People want to chas v'shalom forget about them. We're not going to forget. But you think about survivors who for 30 years, they came to these shores and they didn't say a word. And all of a sudden, they opened up. All of a sudden, they start speaking. They start saying, hey, this is what happened. And this is what happened. Because you can't run away from it. It's who we are. But when we run, when you go into exile and you become comfortable there, you fall into that, get lulled into that sense of comfort, of false sense of stability. And then finally, it leads us to this third shot, which is the second one brought, but that's why the Kli Yoker takes us the third, which is Nistalka Mimena Shechina, the divine presence that we might think we have with us, that yearning for something better, for something greater, for something deeper, it goes away. And as Alan said, all of a sudden, the people that were promised the land of Israel to go and to inherit and to live in, hello, the famine ended, they ate their food, go home! But it didn't happen. Nistalka Mimenu Shechina, right? The divine presence, that yearning for something more, it was taken away. But really, more aptly, it went away. They let it slip away, and it led to the ultimate galus. And for us to sort of recapture and refind that spirit of who we were and what we are. And that's why. And with this, I'll close. Think about it. Why is everything we do, and there are a lot of different answers, but just bear with me on this strand. Why is everything we do Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? Everything. Shabbos, whatever, Kriyat Shema, every mitzvah, the most remote mitzvah. You're doing Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why? Because we always have to remember that we're going somewhere. We're going somewhere. And there is a Yeshua that we're looking ahead to, that we're looking forward to. And in Mirtz Hashem, it can come and will come, keheref ayin. But when we let go of that mentality, of that dream, then we cease being Yehudim. We cease being the Jewish people, that we're meant to be, an Am HaTikva, a nation of hope, a nation of optimism, and a nation yearning for something more and deeper, in this world. Shukoyach to everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you. L'shana Tova. Someone said to me, can I say Shana Tova to you, Rabbi? You know, is it appropriate? I said to him, you know what? It was like a non-observant guy, you know. I said, you know what? This year, we'll take as many Shana Tovas as we can get. So L'shana Tova. We'll see you in 2021. Bye-bye, everyone.